The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
In addition to taking care of one another inside the church, what if we developed a lifestyle of taking care of the most needy outside the walls of the church? How would that change the community and our city? Bob Moffitt, president and founder of Harvest Foundation in Phoenix, along with Pastor Julian Gibb, talked with pastors and leaders about how sacrificial love by those in the church to those in need outside the church has helped people see and embrace Jesus Christ. It's that demonstration of Jesus' greatest commandment that we'll hear more about today on The Kingdom and Its Stories.
Well, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, good night, wherever you are. Welcome to the show, particularly if you're listening online as well. It's great to have you. My name is Julian Gibb from the Harvest Foundation. And today we are blessed to have my new friend. His name is Michael. And I heard about Michael at church one day and just we got into a further conversation and just knew he had to come on the show. So, Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, Michael, you I'm British, you're German.
Yes.
And so, you know, we're from Europe, but you have a very interesting history, a very interesting testimony that you're going to share with us.
Yes, yes.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. You let's not go into like names of cities and things, but you were brought up in Germany, and tell us about, you know, from 1 to 14, what was happening in your life.
Yeah, I was born in 86 in Germany, very, very much in the countryside, small village, close to Frankfurt, but still far enough away to really be in the sticks and not really part of the urban city vibe. And it was a very great early childhood. You know, we had forests all around us. We played a lot as kids outside. This was before cell phones and everybody knowing where everybody is constantly. You know, it was a safe world. And it was actually the early years as a child were quite happy out there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was, you know, saying to you on the way up how I had a trip to Germany for 2 weeks.
Yes.
And I was out there just sort of as a small boy kayaking and enjoying the hills and, you know, so great. So you had this happy, pleasant upbringing. Germany, you know, one of the most prosperous, powerful, educated countries in the world. Mm-hmm. But then, so about age 14, 15 or whatever, the wheels started to come off. What happened?
Yes, it did. So I grew up in a very Christian home, but a very legalistic Christian home. So we went to church all the time, but it was more about rules than anything else, right? So the women had to dress a certain way. They couldn't wear pants. They couldn't cut their hair. So all my life, my family tried to foster that identity in that religion, in that church, which was a Christian church. I wouldn't call it a cult necessarily, but it was, for me, I wasn't possible to form any identity around Christ, because Christ to me was just this giant killjoy in the sky that has a bunch of rules that makes that it's going to be sad if you do something wrong. We couldn't have a TV. I couldn't have video games. So I was that odd kid too that, you know, I always struggled to find friends that would respect me because we were just living so out of the norm. And so very early I started to try to find an identity in anything else but that, because I was embarrassed for it. And, you know, going into those years, those early teen years, 12, 13, made a lot of negative experiences around that identity topic where, you know, in Germany, and you probably know this being from Europe, Germany dealt with our history in World War II very harshly, and so there wasn't also any identity in the country itself, right? So picture this little disillusioned white boy trying to find identity mixed with a strong immigration from a lot of Muslim migrants in the schools that had their identity, right? They had their religion, they had their family, community, and they were really dominating a lot of the playgrounds on the school. And I was beat up quite a lot by Turkish kids, you know, along with some of my friends. And, you know, during that time, there was a very strong alt-right movement, you would call it, here in the States, a neo-Nazi movement going on with skinhead movement that was going after exactly what I was, a disillusioned, identity-seeking white kid that had some struggles. And that was looking for that identity. And they would come to us saying, hey, you're part of us. Actually see what all is wrong with this country and see, you know, that it all kind of roots in the loss of our identity and our people and whatnot. And really the entry drug comes in these movements through music. So they were passing around this incredible, powerful music, not very well produced, but very strong, very rebellious. Because in Germany, it's so anti anything patriotic or anything nationalistic, it felt like a drug to us. Like, whoa, you're not supposed to say that, are you? You know,
and it was it was cool. It was exciting.
Yeah. It was really speaking to me. And all of a sudden, you belong to this group, right? And you dress a certain way, you identify yourself a certain way, you listen to that music, you go out to parties. That was like age 14, 15 when the drinking starts, the just experimenting with just all these things. And it really sucked me into that pretty good. And at that time, it wasn't necessarily about philosophy or just I don't want to call it doctrine, but it wasn't so much about ideology. It was just that, like, we belong together, us against them.
Yeah.
The music combines it all. And you have your new identity.
So so you're out there one time, you're running around the hills, and then you know, your family are from a Christian church where they're you know, I mean, Christ calls us to, you know, not purposefully, not intention, not sort of as a protest, but to be, you know, the salt and the light, to be different from the people around us, but yours stood out in other ways. And so there you are trying to find a place to fit in, you know, like every other human being on earth, trying to find out who they are,
right?
You know, when they're in their teenage years, you know, it's like, who am I, you know, and how can I be accepted, you
know? Yes, exactly.
And so whilst you had this, you were saying that, you know, you and your friends were being beaten up in the playground for being different. I don't know how to say, or for being German.
For being German, yeah. it's a problem. I think it's gotten better since.
Right.
But yeah, I think when you have this sort of weak, identityless culture.
Yeah.
Because I got to give Germany credit for that. That, you know, I think the country, like no other country, dealt with their sins, but I think they went a little overboard. That you could really say in school, every major class throughout grades 4 through I'd say 10, 11 deals with it. Like I was surprised they wouldn't even talk about it in math. You know, like so it really. Trying to strongly make that point, like, this can never happen again, and really going after any identity in your nation. And it's so overboard, and I think it still is, it's gotten better over time, that it already forms a breeding ground for some, like, rebellion.
Right.
And if then there comes a strong new subculture in, different religion, different culture, very strong, it's almost like we were being mocked for not having any identity, right?
Right.
And really, like, Islam is a very conquering religion too, so there's a lot of that, like, we're taken over vibe that we were feeling. And it started that rebellion in me even more.
Right.
Where it's like, this is not right. And then came that movement.
Right.
And it's like, you're right. What you're feeling is exactly right. You're supposed to feel that way.
Right.
And here's some music that reinforces that, and it sounds cool, and why don't you come to this party, and why did you dress a certain way? And we were respected too. All of a sudden, they were still hating you, but they weren't beating you up anymore because they knew you'll come back with a bunch of other people and we're going to be very brutal to you. And that, an experience like that, like, you can't touch me anymore because I belong to something finally.
Yeah.
And I have friends and I have a community, almost like a family. that's really when you get addicted to it.
Because, you know, I mean, you were saying how you were feeling, you know, before, weak and powerless.
Yes.
You know, so you were, first of all, with this young kid, trying to find an identity, trying to find to fit in with a group, and then being beaten up in the playground, feeling weak and powerless. And so this group, this neo-Nazi, you know, group, was it National Socialists? They gave you support. They made you feel part of their team.
Yes.
You know, in some perverse sense, in a perverse sense, they gave you a mission, a purpose.
Right.
You know, I speak for myself, you know, when I'm 14, you know, it was about video games and, you know,
right.
Playing soccer, you know, and so there's no purpose, no mission.
That's right. Yep.
So they come armed, they find you and they give you a purpose and a mission and tell you that, tell you what?
They tell you that we have to change things around here. This is not right. Mm. We need to take our country back. It pretty soon blended into, obviously, racial topics like, you know, these are our people, these are our lands, this is our race. There's a coordinated attack by a certain group against our group to destroy us. And at first, you really don't think, what's the big deal? Of course we should be for our people. Of course we should protect our nation. Of course we should protect our values. Those are conservative talking points, right? But then it quickly blends into just this racial hatred that there is something inherently wrong with anybody else except us because they're trying to take it from us. Mm. And the mission really starts with, like, we got to be a counterculture. We need to bring back the values of our culture, and we need to bring back certain things the way they used to be, which ultimately what they mean is, let's bring back and let's revive what Hitler started, which is just this dominating worldview of like, we are the master race, and really the world is better off if we spread out,
right,
and we protect and grow and conquer what we stand for, right?
So a real Aryan mindset.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. So, you know, because, I mean, I'm English, Scottish, whatever. I'm a mongrel, but you know, my grandparents fought in the Second World War, you know, and so, you know, I was sort of raised up with, you know, Germans, you know, watch out for them.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also so much that's so good in German history, you know,
yes,
going back over the centuries as well, you know, and so I guess no one's saying that what happened, you know, in 1939 or build up to that was good. You know,
no.
It was hideous, you know,
yes.
but I guess, you know, when you say to a whole country, you know, we are worthless, you know, we are nothing, you know, it's kind of just like, you're almost pushing at a negative reaction.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of like the feeding ground for people to say, like, whoa, you know, I'm not worthless, I'm
yes,
not nothing,
mm-hmm,
you know. So you thought God, there was nothing good there, Jesus was a killjoy, and that he just, you know, you had no relationship with him. So you walked, in a sense, away from him and towards the Nazis. And how did you then get back to Jesus? I mean, so now you're a Jesus follower. What was it? Was there something that was happening with this group of neo-Nazis that sort of pushed you in that direction? Was there a wake-up call, or what was that situation?
Yeah, the wake-up call came very late. So I probably entered it around age 14, 15, and I really exited it at age 21. So that I think that this kind of group that brought us all in, the music, the clothing style, just the unity, that was kind of the beginning, the entry drug. But, you know, when you obviously this whole time the Lord was knocking on my door, right, and tried to I mean, I don't think I was ever saved in that time, but I had praying parents, I had concerned teachers, I had other family and friends that didn't like this. And so, obviously, God was using them to speak into my life. And obviously, you have your own conscience, right? you do realize where there's something in us, I think, that God puts into us a conscience that does react negatively towards genocide and just killing people because they look different, right? There is something in there. But then I compare it to where in the Bible with Moses and Pharaoh, that Pharaoh hardened his heart more and more and more. And that's what happened to me. Any kind of knocking from the Lord, I refused and I hardened my heart. So I tried to find ultimate purpose and meaning going deeper and deeper into that ideology.
Right.
So pretty soon it wasn't about drinking beer and having short hair and wearing a certain style of clothes and listening to music. It was really trying to find anything that would feed my narrative of white supremacy and German supremacy. And pretty soon you start reading books and you start going to seminars, you start reading things and watching things that are very twisted in their historical analysis, in their anthropological analysis. I don't know if that's been set right, but to feed your narrative.
Yeah.
And, you know, hardening your heart more and more and more gets you deeper and deeper into this.
So let me just interrupt. So, you know, it started off with parties.
Right.
You know, and so it's kind of like, hey, you're a 14-year-old kid. Here's a can of beer. Mm-hmm. You know, come and join a party. There'll be girls there. Yay.
Yeah,
you know.
Right.
And so you go there and these people are bringing you in and they're friendly to you. You know, they're recruiting you in a sense, you know,
right.
And so it's all smiles and happiness and whatever. But what did it stay like that? I mean, was it just all parties?
No. So you progress, right? And there's always this movement is still pretty strong, and there's always people who are kind of in that entry class, so to speak, right? They're just kind of playing with it a little bit, getting interested, but then sooner or later you can find those people who are really make it all about the ideology, and they start really forming that mindset in you that it is about changing things, right? So let's go to demonstrations, let's plan attacks against, like, there's a lot of violence all of a sudden involved, let's speak up about it constantly, let's hang banners in the middle of the night, you know, with certain symbols and certain slogans to just cause disruption. And I was trying to really find it there, because, you know, you're not fulfilled by just drinking beer and looking a certain way. You want to really build your life around this, right? And
right.
It wasn't Jesus. That I determined at that time that that's not my way. It wasn't anything politics or just mundane living of sports and you mentioned video games or just living a boring middle class life. It was about bringing real change to something I felt was terribly wrong and needed fixing. And it really also has religious elements in it, right? So you're severely anti-Christian at that point, because it's a religion that came from the Jews, right? It's like Christians are friendly towards the Jews, so what do we do with Christians? This is this foreign God concept. Like, our original concept was more of that Germanic gods like Odin and Thor and Valkyrias and all that kind of stuff, which now sounds silly to me, but you're really getting into this.
Yeah.
And there's also an interesting blending towards sort of that satanic black metal field that you wouldn't think, but it's all ultimately demonic. And so there's some friendly alliances there where it got pretty dark pretty quickly too. And I think to answer your question, those were the times then towards probably 18, 19 where I saw some things in the movement. I watched certain people radically change, become so hateful, so cold, so nasty in their thinking and how they were treating people around them, that I felt the Lord knocking on my door stronger, like, you're on a very dangerous path. And I would still push it away, but I felt like I felt so cold and so hard, right? I remember one incident where my mom tried to talk to me after I had literally a fist fight with my dad about this, and she was saying, like, you're going to be ending up in prison because you're so hate-filled. You're going to blow up one day, and it's going to not be good. And she was crying saying this, and I was like, that made me thinking, like, on what kind of a life path am I on?
I guess if your heart has turned to ice, to stone, to ice, you know, it's like an iceberg. You know, so one little blast of hot air isn't going to melt it. You know,
yes.
Was it sort of a a continual stream of words from your parents and others that's slowly melted this. I mean, I'm assuming there was some divine intervention at some point.
I think so.
Yeah. But so you're on these rallies, you know, and you've already told me that, you know, you weren't involved yourself in violence, in beating people up or whatever, but you were certainly on the marches with people doing these things, you know, and you were, you know, in your mind sort of doing what was right, you know, casting out the, you didn't believe in Jesus, but casting out the evil in the land, you know, purging the land. What was the state of your heart at this time? So at one point you are a lost teenager, and then suddenly you're part of this group, you know, and you were saying it was just like being in family, you know, that that these people, you had like, you know, intimate relationships. They were like family. They were people who came around you, had your back, you know, no more beating up in the playground, you know, gave you a purpose in life. So when you know, there must have been like a trajectory of you going upwards and like, yes, this is it, you know, and then, you know, but at some point, you know, once the parties, you'd moved on from there and it had got into watching people being beat up, you know, or
activism.
You know, what was the state of your heart? Was it were you still on fire with passion, or were you dissolving inside?
I think both things, right? I think hatred is one of the most powerful drugs. So you get used to it, you get addicted to it. The more you dive into these ideas, and the more you focus on everything that is wrong with your country or the world, constantly, it feeds the hatred. And at the same time, and I think that was probably the work of the Holy Spirit, I felt like dying inside. Right? It's like, okay, it's a drug. It makes me addicted towards this. But every time I feel colder and more empty. And at that time, to kind of tell you how this was all turned around, at that time I moved back to, we were living in Berlin for a few years, which radicalized me more, because Berlin is much more, there's much more activism there. Those are not skinheads anymore drinking beer. Those are real activists, right? And there's a lot of underground things going on, private concerts, private parties, private things, you know, people living together on some farms, trying to create their perfect Aryan lifestyle world. So it's crazy. But I moved back to my old town, and an old friend of mine, who I actually liked back then, I still like her, but you know what I mean. Like, I was kind of attracted to her before, and she kind of reached out and asked how I was doing, and I was like, I'm doing okay. And she invited me to church. It's like, church? No way. You know, I like was done with that. But she's like, well, I want you to meet my future husband. He's the youth pastor. It's like, oh, really? Okay, I'll check it out. You know, I wanted to see what's going on there. And made it to church one day, and the pastor at that time was doing a series on just the demonic, just Satan's world, Satan's work in the world. And interesting, it wasn't really much about Jesus. It was more about the devil and his schemes and effects. But you couldn't have been speaking clearer to me.
Really?
And making me understand, like, oh, okay. Because still with your God-given conscience that every human being has, a lot of this this stuff, this ideology, really, you still feel like there's something wrong with it. And all of a sudden, somebody gave me a real explanation for some things I've seen, some things I was feeling, and I started to become interested. Started going to church more often, quietly, secretly, and it took me about a year from that time on to really leave the movement. Mm. And I think the most pivotal moment was when I was at a march. This was 2007, and I saw the people around me shouting, just being angry, seeing just how all of a sudden how meaningless this really is if you don't have a solution like God saving this world. There's never going to be a real solution to this. And God almost audibly spoke to me like, you do not belong here anymore. You need to get out of here.
Wow.
And really a very direct call, like, this is it now. Make your decision, you know. So, yeah.
So at one point you're on a march, screaming out hate. You know, people around you vandalizing things and doing whatever, and then right in hell, basically. You know, you hear this voice and say, like, you no longer belong here.
Yes, yes.
Well, friends who are listening, we're going to be continuing with Michael. You're going to have to wait next week to hear the next part, but we're going to be carrying on and finding out about how God then used Michael in order to reach out to the people around him, how God used him to undo the damage that he had done, and then even more, to bring in more love. So please do tune in next week, and we look forward to seeing and joining you then. Bye-bye.
Jesus defines discipleship as come and follow me. Next Monday at 5:30 p.m. on Faith Talk 1360, we'll hear another testimonial from a leader demonstrating how they and the people of the church are sacrificially loving the needy and beginning to see real change in their communities. If you have a personal example of how you are being the hands and feet of Jesus with your neighbors, we'd love to hear from you. Enter your story at harvestfoundation.org. That's harvestfoundation.org on the Contact Us tab. You can also subscribe to the podcast on The Kingdom and Its Stories on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.